Good morning. This is Wendy Bauer with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated April 15th, 2019. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Walk This Way, Late Start to Exercise Routine Better Than No Exercise. The article starts with a photograph of a silver-haired lady seated and raising her legs in an exercise room, captioned, Janie Walker performs leg exercises during the stretch and flex class led by residence assistant Sherry Hart at the Glenwood Assisted Living Facility in Mount Zion on Friday. She recently turned 99. This is from Decatur by Donette Beckett. It is never too late to take up exercise. At 99 years old, Janie Walker is a prime example. Shortly after she moved into the Glenwood Supported Living Facility in Mount Zion 4 years ago, Walker started an exercise routine of walking at least a mile every day and participating in Stretch and Flex, the facility's workout class. They exercise your arms and then your legs, she said, and I walk up and down the halls. She also walks down there to the dining room every day for breakfast and back, and then every day for lunch and back, and for supper and back, said her son, Jim Walker. Then in between. Her family measured the route their mother takes every day, which equals a mile. It feels like it, at least, she said. Starting up an exercise routine late in life is no excuse for being a slacker. In just a few years, the senior citizen has already acquired a reputation. They call her Speedy, said son-in-law Gene Stoner. Janie Walker recently celebrated her 99th birthday. Guests at her birthday party included all three children, as well as her grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and great-great-grandchildren. We have five generations three times, said her granddaughter, Deanna Hill. Although she is known for her exercise around the facility, she has a reputation for a gentle spirit. She is one of the kindest people on earth, Cheryl Walker said. Her hairdresser calls her royalty. The Glenwood staff agree. Administrator Linda Johnson has watched Janie Walker walk by her office throughout the day. She is as sweet as the day is long, she said. I've never seen her or heard her when she is upset about anything. Before Janie Walker moved to the Glenwood, she lived in a Decatur home with several flights of steps. She said that was the extent of her exercise. She lived in a tri-level house. Wherever you go, you've got to go up and down steps, Jim Walker said. I also worked in the garden, Walker said. When she is resting in her apartment, Janie Walker will listen to audiobooks her children bring her during their visits. She isn't picky about what they choose. I like any kind, she said, but it seems like most of them end up murdering somebody. Janie Walker also takes shopping trips with her family. She still walks through Walmart, said her daughter-in-law, Cheryl Walker. The exercises must be doing some good. The only medication she is prescribed is for her eyes. According to her family, her exercise routine is the only healthy part of her life. Her eating habits are nothing to brag about. Or can she? Her favorite restaurants are Crekle's and Monocle's Pizza. She often has a stash of chips and candy hidden in the seat of her walker. Her presents often consist of saltwater taffy, specialty caramels, and chocolate creations. The Glenwood staff offers healthy meals, but whether you eat them or not, that's up to you, Jim Walker said. Janie Walker instead orders hot dogs, chicken strips, and other less healthy options. But breakfast is her favorite meal, Johnson said. She wouldn't miss breakfast if her life depended on it. But that's the secret for living long, said Carolyn Stoner about her mother. The daily exercise class offered by the Glenwood staff encourages the residents to participate in various movements, such as sit-down jumping jacks and marching in place. "It's regular exercises, only you're sitting down," Janie Walker said. "They say it's good for me." The facility offers other activities, including bingo and a puzzle club. None is an interest to Janie Walker. "I can't see the puzzles," she said. And she says bingo is for old people. And this article was part of the Together Decatur series. And if you know of a person or a story that exemplifies the best of Decatur, contact Donette Beckett at 217-421-6983 or dbeckett at herald-review.com. And continuing on the front page, majoring in marijuana. Colleges ramp up job training as demand for pot grows. Marijuana companies are on the prowl for new employees, but experience growing weed in the basement likely won't fly on a resume. The bar for entry-level positions is moving higher as marijuana companies grow so fast it is no longer practical to train workers new to the industry. Growers and dispensaries increasingly want employees with academic training. The result? More colleges are starting to offer, for lack of a better term, a degree in growing marijuana. "You're going to need somebody who's got some knowledge that can adapt that to the facility," said Paul Chialdikas, Vice President of Sales and Marketing at Bedford Grow, which has a cultivation facility in Bedford Park, Illinois. "Timing is going to be critical for us to grab an employee that has experience. We need them now." Most employees that have entered Illinois' young marijuana industry did so either with experience earned in the black market or in states with more mature cannabis programs like Colorado or California. Often they have not worked with the plant at all. Brian Kirkland and Jake Tracy started at Bedford Grow about 3 years ago without any experience. Kirkland was a butcher and Tracy was in landscaping. Like all new employees at the facility, they started as trimmers and have since worked their way up. For the past two harvests, or about 6 months, Kirkland and Tracy, now assistant cultivators, have each been in charge of the crop in one of Bedford Grow's four grow rooms. Sunglasses on, Kirkland moved among marijuana plants as blazing grow lights beat down, preparing a solution that would deliver nutrients to the plumping buds. The plants in his grow room were about a month from harvest, and they needed the food to produce dense, flavorful buds. Kirkland knew the solution would clog the tubes normally used to water the plants, so he had to feed them by hand. In a plant-filled room nearby, Tracy cleaned his water lines. The plants in Tracy's room were younger than Kirkland's, maybe 2 months old. "In about a week, they'll be ready to start growing buds," he said. Kirkland and Tracy learned how to tend to the highly valued marijuana plants by apprenticing under the facility's head growers. Soon, Bedford Grow will add more cultivation rooms and need more growers to manage them. On a recent afternoon, Chialdikas opened a door at the facility to a sprawling room currently used for storage. "This is the opportunity for us when the market goes recreational to add 8 more growing rooms," he said, looking out across the mostly empty space. Many Illinois marijuana operators are already expanding their growing facilities. They're working to supply a medical marijuana program that has added 25,000 patients in the past year, and they're getting ready for the state's potential legalization of recreational use, which could send demand soaring. Schools around the country are rolling out cannabis courses or degree programs. Northern Michigan University launched a 4-year medicinal plant chemistry degree in the fall of 2017. That first semester, 20 students participated. Enrollment was up to 220 a year later. The University of California at Davis started offering a class on how cannabis compounds affect the human body last fall. Marijuana law classes are becoming more common, too, with courses at schools in Colorado, Ohio, and Chicago. More Illinois colleges and universities see the advantages to training their students for the advancing industry, but there are limits to how quickly they can roll out new programs. Almost daily, Karen Midden, interim dean of the College of Agricultural Sciences at Southern Illinois University in Carbondale, gets a call from someone with a question about the cannabis program the school announced last year. Medical cannabis growers also call in search of students who know a thing or two about running a greenhouse. People think it's some magical thing you have to learn to grow marijuana, she said. In reality, she said, some of the same principles students learn about greenhouses or soil can be applied to cannabis. SIU plans to bundle classes it already offers, plus a few new cannabis-specific courses, into a 30-credit-hour cannabis certificate program. But all the university approvals need to launch a new program mean it likely won't be available until the end of the year, Midden said. Some SIU agricultural alumni have already pursued work in the industry. Jacob Heller graduated from SIU's production horticulture program and worked at a commercial-scale indoor farm after graduation. He got into the cannabis industry in early 2016 through a job at Bedford Grow. Now, the 27-year-old is cultivation manager at the Chambersburg, Pennsylvania grow facility for Chicago-based Grassroots Cannabis. I learned a ton when I first started working with the plants. The whole cannabis industry evolved separate from traditional horticulture, Heller said. But also, once I learned the method of what the head growers wanted and what they expected, I was able to draw on a lot of my experience to improve processes and make and grow healthier plants. Last month, Oakton Community College in Des Plaines said it was launching a program that would train students how to work with medical marijuana patients. Quality bud tenders, as dispensary workers are often called, are in high demand as the number of patients shopping at Illinois dispensaries increases. The job is much more complicated than just selling the weed, said Chris Torres, patient care specialist at Greengate Chicago, a dispensary in the Rogers Park neighborhood. Bud tenders work with customers to find the right marijuana strains and products to treat serious illnesses. To be eligible for Illinois' medical cannabis program, people must either have one of about 40 qualifying conditions, such as AIDS or cancer, or have a condition for which opioids could be prescribed. And moving to the local and state page, betting on shoppers. During a recent stroll through his company's store at Valley West Mall in Des Moines, Iowa, Von Maur president Jim Von Maur lamented the fall of former retail giants like Yonkers. When we see people go out of business, it's not really the internet, he told the Des Moines Register. It's because there wasn't an exciting reason to go to the store. As brick-and-mortar stores across the country try to stay afloat, Von Maur has doubled down on the company's core belief. Americans want to go out and shop. Founded in Davenport, Iowa in 1872, the family-owned company now has 33 stores in 15 states, stretching from Kansas to New York and Minnesota to Alabama. A new store will open this fall in Grand Rapids, Michigan, with another planned for Orland Park, Illinois. It's never good to see your industry in a huge flux of change, but at the same time, It validates what we're doing the whole time, which is run the store the way it's always been done and not change so much, Von Maur said. It also operates a location at Hickory Point Mall in Forsyth, which previously had a Yonkers. While headlines point the finger at online shopping for the decline of traditional retail stores, Ann Brower, a senior partner at McMillan Doolittle, a retail consulting firm out of Chicago, said it's a misconception that Amazon and other web-based retailers are killing brick-and-mortar shopping. Her evidence, online retailers are rapidly expanding the number of real-world storefronts they're opening across the country. Extreme value and low-cost companies like the Dollar Store, TJ Maxx, Five Below, and Marshalls are growing in the market, Brower said. At the other end of the spectrum, luxury stores like Von Maur continue to attract customers willing to spend money on high-end products. And next, Tony Reed writes from Decatur, American Roots Medley. Bluegrass and more served up monthly at Bluegrass Music Jam. They don't play them like they used to, except on the second Sunday of every month from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. out at Decatur's Rock Springs Nature Center. The Bluegrass Music Jam has a tradition that plucks the mystic chords of memory back some 40 years and ranges beyond bluegrass to include a rich sampling of American country roots music. The number and variety of musicians playing any monthly gig is kind of just down to who shows up, clutching what instrument, with Sunday's ensemble featuring 7 or 8 players at any one time and an age range of 14 into the 70s. The players work together to bend the music around widely varying skill levels, and Stephen Willoughby, a Decatur lawyer by day, did a brave job trying to keep up with seasoned guitarist John Stevens in an impromptu stab at dueling banjos, as made famous in the Deliverance movie. Willoughby's flashing fingers did their best, but he had to admit later, there were times when I got lost. The 71-year-old, who started playing at his grandfather's knee, said he knows he needs to practice more than just the law. And if I do practice it for a while, I'll know I'll be able to play it, he added, making a strong case for himself. Willoughby is a great advocate for the joys of music made locally and said the crowd listening Sunday, for free, could be served a feast of bluegrass without the musicians having to kill themselves to play it. Well, like one guy said about it, with 4 chords, you can play 3,000 or 4,000 bluegrass songs, said Willoughby with a smile. The songs are usually fairly simple, with a little gospel influence in them. John Stevens, who heads his own band, Cactus Ranch, never gets tired of performing at Rock Springs. It's pure, it's natural. Pure and natural, and you don't need any big amplifiers, and you don't need electricity. You just need a guitar, a fiddle, and some feeling, and that's all you need, said Stevens, 56. There was an audience of more than 60 for Sunday's jam, and they included several members of the Funk family, who came to see 14-year-old Christian Funk from Decatur play guitar and sing. He's my grandson, so I enjoy a chance to see him, but I also like this kind of music. It's relaxing and it's fun, said Gianna Funk, in town from her home in Oregon, the Illinois Oregon. Christian's mom, Sarah Funk, said her son is probably more comfortable with the Pearl Jam songbook, but she says he has a fine ear for all good music, and she thinks it's important to learn to be versatile. Bluegrass isn't necessarily his first love, but I want him to be able to adapt to any situation, she said. And it's nice to get him out of his comfort zone. As for me, bluegrass is one of my favorites. And if you've got a story to suggest to Tony Reed, give him a call at 217-421-7977. from Decatur, road rage incident leads to two arrests. Two women were arrested on preliminary charges of vehicular invasion and mob action Saturday evening after a road rage incident that saw a Decatur driver beaten in her sport utility vehicle, police said. Detective Sergeant Chris Copeland with Decatur Police said the 31-year-old victim was driving west in the 2400 block of East Main Street around 6:30 p.m. In the car with her was her sister, aged 25, and the driver's 2-year-old son. As the vehicle approached the intersection with North 22nd Street, Copeland said a car appeared traveling eastbound on the one-way road, heading right for her. The driver had to slam on her brakes and swerve to avoid a collision, Copeland said. Angered, the driver watched the car pull into an address in the 2200 block of East Main Street, and she then pulled up outside to yell at the female driver of the other car. She then pulled into a parking lot next to the house and continued to yell abuse at the other driver, including using a racial slur, Copeland said. Copeland said the other driver had by now walked over to the lot where the SUV driver was parked and began arguing with her, and she was soon joined by another woman from the house, who also began yelling at the SUV driver. During the argument, the car driver reached into the victim's vehicle and struck her on the left side of her face 3 times near her left eye, said Copeland, and the other female reached through the driver's side passenger window of the SUV and struck the woman 1 time in the face, too. The SUV driver was later treated at a local hospital, but her injuries were not thought to be serious. The preliminary charges facing the arrested women, one aged 23 and the other 22, are subject to review by the Macon County State's Attorney's Office. Next, also from Decatur, anti-violence event on Tuesday. The public is invited to a community anti-violence event from 4 to 8 p.m. Tuesday, April 16th at the Decatur Public Library Madden Auditorium. The free event will address topics such as criminal justice reform, celebrating and encouraging women, and life skills. Entertainment will also be provided. Michelle Hope Walker is sponsoring the forum with various speakers invited to join in the discussions. For more information, call 323-338-6580. Next, solar farms on hold. County projects lose in lottery. From Decatur. The solar surge in Macon County will have to wait. 5 community solar farm projects, 2 in Oriana, 2 in Decatur, and 1 in Argenta, lost a state lottery for renewable energy credits last week, joining a lengthy waitlist of projects across Illinois. Advocates say an expansion of the state's renewable energy program could open up room for more solar farms to be built, but it's unclear whether lawmakers are willing to foot the bill. For now, the results were a disappointment to landowners like Jay Edgecombe, whose property would have hosted the first solar farm that the Macon County Board approved last year. "It doesn't surprise me," he said. "I would have liked to be picked, but there's not a whole lot I can do about it." Community solar projects are those that sell electricity to subscribers. They are typically hosted on 15 to 20 acres and could generate up to 2,000 kilowatts of power. Statewide, 909 such projects were entered into the lottery, and just 112 won credits in the results announced Thursday by the Illinois Power Agency. The lottery is part of a massive expansion of renewable energy in Illinois sparked by the Future Energy Jobs Act. Passed in 2016, it called for a quarter of the state's power production to come from sources such as wind and solar by 2025. Winning solar farm operators will ultimately be able to sell renewable energy credits back to utility companies, Power Agency Director Anthony Starr said. Starr said a lottery was necessary because the demand for the renewable energy credits far outweighed available funds. Illinois' community solar program was only able to support 12% of the projects that applied, Starr said. Without an expansion of the state program, the remaining projects are in limbo, according to Pete Gray, spokesman for the Path to 100 Coalition, a group of labor and renewable energy businesses and nonprofit organizations that are working to expand Illinois' renewable energy program. Illinois' solar energy expansion added more than 1,300 new jobs in the state in 2018. That figure is expected to increase this year as construction begins on the projects that received tax credits. We've proven that Illinois' renewable energy program can deliver jobs and economic growth for all communities in our state, said Nakia Morissette, Midwest Director of State Affairs for the Solar Energy Industries Association. Labor and renewable energy organizations are united in support of HB 2966, which would create 20,000 new wind and solar jobs and generate more than $3 billion in new tax revenue for Illinois. Converting to solar power helps consumers reduce their electricity bills, and community solar projects generate an average of $140,000 per megawatt in local property taxes over a project's 20-year life. In Macon County, the wait-listed projects are at 4242 Kirby Road, Oriana, 602 East Broadway Street, Argenta, 4640 East Alinawick Road, Oriana, Wesley Road and St. Louis Bridge Road, Decatur, Brush College Road and Cundiff Road, Indicator. Projects in another category, large distributed generation, were more successful, with all 740 statewide qualifying for new renewable energy credits. These projects use solar panels to generate electricity for businesses and property owners. In Decatur, those planning projects include Busey Bank downtown and Walmart on the city's north side. For solar supporters hoping to see a community project in Macon County, there is some hope. Several pieces of legislation being proposed in Springfield would bring more funding for renewable energy, opening up the chance for more projects to receive credits. The Path to 100 Coalition is among those lobbying to expand the program, arguing that the state cannot meet its energy goals without doing so. We appreciate the Illinois Power Agency's tireless work in executing Illinois' first adjustable block program, said Leslie McCain, Executive Director of the Illinois Solar Energy Association, in a statement. Now that millions have been invested in project development and consumers and counties across the state are waiting to benefit from solar power, we need the General Assembly to act and expand this successful program. Regardless of what happens in Springfield, Jay Edgecombe said he hopes to try again to get a solar farm on his property. It promises more money than I get per acre than the cash rent crop, he said. The solar farm isn't as dangerous to the land compared to wind farms. The solar farm doesn't make noise or kill birds. And if you have a story to suggest for Allison Petty, call her at 217-421-6986. And we'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, April 15th, 2019. Please stay tuned.